Mike, how are
hey,
you?
Hey, Bishop, how you doing today?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Oh, good, good. Welcome, everybody. Total Opposites Podcasting. Hope you guys are all doing good today. We got some great topics today, and Bishop Greg's going to lead our first segment today. Well, enough of me talking. You go ahead and take it away.
Everybody, I hope everyone's doing well tonight. We're going to talk a little bit in our first segment about Black History Month. February, of course, is Black History Month, and I don't think a lot of people really understand or realize where that comes from. I think a lot of people think it's a newer invention. I get a lot of people who tell me, oh, it's just liberals trying to rewrite history. Or take away from white people's history. And that's just not the case. The first Black History Month began in 1926. So it's not that new of an invention. In fact, it'll be nearly 100 years old in just a couple of years. And it's been essentially a federally recognized holiday since 1976. So, you know, either way you cut it, it's been around for quite a long while. It was started by Carter G. Woodson, a noted African-American historian, scholar, educator, and publisher. So, you know, not something that just kind of sprouted up out of the middle of nowhere.
Yep.
Another thing people don't realize is that the NAACP, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, actually started February 12th of 1909.
Wow.
So it's been around over 100 years. In fact, in 2019, it celebrated its 110th anniversary. So this year makes it 112 years old in just a few days. And it was launched on that date because it was the centennial anniversary of the birth of Abraham Lincoln.
Wow.
So a lot of history behind a lot of the things that we do in this month to remember people of color.
Can I ask you one question really quick?
Sure.
Do you agree with the statues being taken down along the Capitol and things like that? And why?
The statues of people who were slaveholders and figures in the Civil War? Is that what you're talking about?
Oh, yeah. Well, and anybody and everybody, whoever got taken down.
Well, most of them that were taken down because they were prominent figures in the Civil War, fighting, of course, for the opposite side of the fence, fighting for the South, or who were notorious supporters of slavery. And to be honest, I think that I go by this simple motto. Go through Germany and tell me how many statues to Hitler exist.
Oh, yeah.
You know, go through Russia after liberation, show me how many statues of Stalin and Lenin and those guys exist.
Yeah.
How many statues in Italy are erected to, you know, Mussolini?
Yeah.
When you erect statues to people like that, you certainly do a great disservice because you're glorifying their bad actions. And I mean, nobody's perfect. I mean, they all make mistakes. And, you know, but when you have people who outright committed treason against the nation, sedition, and a civil war, and then you're enacting statues to them to celebrate the fact that they fought to keep other people subjugated. They fought and killed their fellow countrymen for the sole express purpose of keeping people subjugated.
Yep.
Well, certain statues should come down. I mean, it's absolutely glorified.
Of course.
And I mean, I don't think that necessarily we have to remove every single statue in the world.
Yeah.
But I think there is good precedent for removing those who committed heinous crimes.
Of course.
And, you know, Spider asks, what about Abe Lincoln and his killing of Native Americans? That makes him really bad.
And he has the biggest statue of them all.
And the sad part is that Lincoln was good and bad, you know.
Yeah, oh, I know. And it's bad to say, but I mean, I know what you're saying.
And so it's one of those things of you have to balance that. Did the good that he did outweigh the bad that he did? I don't know. I'm not somebody who could answer very easily.
Well, you know what? Unfortunately, well, not unfortunately, I shouldn't say that, but a lot of people get remembered for the bad things that they did, not the good. And that goes for anybody and everybody, no matter what circumstance, you know, so.
But, I mean, when you have someone like Robert E. Lee, who is an unrepentant.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Slaveholder and racist and unrepentant, you know, then at a certain point, there's no redeeming them. Even his own relatives have said that his statues need to be taken down.
Yeah, of course.
That speaks volumes. It really does.
Yes, it does.
So that's my view on that.
Okay.
I wanted to mention a few very interesting people. A lot of these names people aren't going to recognize or know. But I did know that spot. These are some of the prominent people of color over the years who have made a difference in our nation in what may be subtle ways and in ways that kind of broke the barriers given the time that it happened. Phyllis Wheatley was the first African-American to publish a book of poetry, poems and various subjects, religious and moral, written in 1773.
Wow.
She was born in Gambia and sold to the Wheatley family in Boston when she was 7 years old. She was emancipated shortly after her book was released. Bar Fights, written by poet and activist Lucy Terry in 1746, was the first known poem written by a Black American. Terry was enslaved in Rhode Island as a toddler, but became free at the age of 26 after marrying a free Black man. And Cloydell, or The President's Daughter, was the first novel published by an African-American in 1853. It was written by abolitionist and lecturer William Wells Brown. William Tucker was the first known Black person to be born in the 13 colonies. He was born in Jamestown, Virginia in 1624. According to BlackPast.org, his parents were indentured servants and part of the first group of Africans brought to colonial soil by Great Britain. Anthony Benezet, a white Quaker, abolitionist, and educator, is credited with creating the first public school for African-American children in the early 1770s. And after graduating from Oberlin College in 1850 with a literary degree, Lucy Stanton became the first Black woman in America. Yeah, to earn.
Oh my God!
She was the first Black woman to earn a 4-year college degree in America. So that's quite.
Oh my God! You know what? That's weird. You say that Oberlin College is 10 minutes away.
Yeah.
And so there is underground tunnels.
Yes.
And so I vaguely remember, correct me if I'm wrong, I really don't know. But I do know that that was a huge checkpoint of, I forget who, took in slaves and got them, I think, out of there, out of the bad places. And Oberlin's huge into slavery, huge. And you can go and see that.
Yeah. The Underground Railroad.
Yes, The Underground Railroad.
Dubbed hip-hop's first godmother by Billboard singer and music producer Sylvia Robertson, produced the first ever commercially successful rap record, Rapper's Delight, by the Sugar Hill Gang. Along with her husband, she co-owned the first hip-hop label, Sugar Hill Records. First. Renowned singer and jazz pianist Nat King Cole was the first Black American to host a TV show, NBC's The Nat King Cole Show. Stevie Wonder is not only the first Black artist to win a Grammy for Album of the Year in 1973, but the first and only musician to win Album of the Year with three consecutive studio albums. Now, this is not too distant past, but 1981, broadcast journalist Bryant Gumbel became the first Black person to host a network morning show to join NBC's Today Show.
Really?
Yeah. And in 1940, Hattie McDaniel became the first Black person to win an Oscar for her supporting role in Gone with the Wind 24 years earlier. Sidney Poitier became the first Black man to win an Oscar for his leading role in Lilies of the Field. In 1952, hairdresser Christina M. Jenkins is credited with inventing the weave, also known as the sew-in. A Louisiana native who eventually relocated to Ohio earned a patent for her creation in 1952. Computer scientist Lisa Gitlobder assisted with the 1995 creation of Shockwave, essential technology that led to the development of the web animation. We also have her to thank for the GIF images. Really? Yeah. Agricultural scientist George Washington Carver was responsible for creating over 500 new products made from peanuts and sweet potatoes, including cooking oil, paint, and soap.
GIF, wow.
In 1908, after winning the four-time 400-meter relay, John Taylor became the first African-American to win gold in the Olympics. And in 1948, Alice Coachman became the first Black woman to win in the world to win an Olympic gold medal while competing in the high jump.
Wow.
Let's see. In 1920, Fitz Pollard and Bobby Marshall became the first Black athletes to play in the NFL. Pollard also went on to become the league's first Black coach.
Wow.
Let's see.
That's all awesome stuff.
Now, this is... we'll talk a little bit about this. First published in 1936, Negro Motorist Green Book was a comprehensive guide for Black travelers about locations across America and eventually overseas that were either Black-owned or didn't engage in segregationist practices. The guide was printed for 30 years, its top publication in 1966, 2 years after the Civil Rights Act passed. So now, the Green Book, Motorist Green Book, that was around for, you know, decades, 60 years actually, was essential for a lot of civil rights activists, because when you were traveling, especially in the South, and you stopped at a business that engaged in segregationist politics or segregationist policies, you could end up beat, arrested, killed just for going into an establishment. So the Motorist Green Book was a must-have by most African-Americans traveling the country. Otherwise, you risk serious harm to yourself.
Absolutely.
The oldest Black female Greek letter organization, Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority, was founded at Howard University in 1908. Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity, the first Black male Greek letter organization, was founded in 1906 at Cornell.
Wow.
It is estimated that 100,000, that's 100,000 enslaved people escaped to the North via the Underground Railroad from 1810 to 1850.
My cousin just said that alpha frat type thing, that's at his college as well. That's very well known.
Oh yeah, Alpha Phi Alpha and Alpha Kappa Alpha are on just about single college campus.
Yeah. He said it was there.
In July of 1777, Vermont became the first colony to ban slavery. Go Vermont. In 1738, a group of newly freed men and women founded the town of Garcia Real de Santa Teresa de Moose, Florida, just 2 miles away from St. Augustine. It's considered to be the first ever free black settlement in the U.S. It was abandoned following the Seven Years' War in 1760.
Wow.
And, of course, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the various things that have happened, such as, you remember back when most of Trump's, back when Trump was still doing a bunch of his rallies, he had anticipated going to Tucson, and holding a rally, not realizing that he was going to go somewhere where African Americans had set up the largest African American economic hub, and had been destroyed by white people. Tulsa, Oklahoma. That's where it was. Tulsa, Oklahoma. Sorry. In Greenwood, it was a freedom colony in Tulsa, Oklahoma. It was predominantly a concentration of African-American businesses. It was known as the Black Wall Street. It was burned to the ground during the Tulsa Race Massacre in 1921. And with white residents massacred as many as 300 black residents, injuring hundreds more and leaving 5,000 people homeless.
Jesus. Yeah. That's insane.
That's one of the great things that we have to be thankful for in our history, as it were. It's sarcasm.
Oh, yeah. Well, they say history repeats itself, and, we're damn near there with all the police brutality, so.
And a few other little miscellaneous facts. Martin Luther King Jr.'s I Have a Dream speech, most of it he improvised. Yeah, and so that was not, he's only allotted 5 minutes to speak, and most of what he spoke about in that speech, he had not written down. He just improvised it. Let's see, he's trying to find the, and a little,
remember two bishop.
A little known fact, Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated on Maya Angelou's 40th birthday.
Yeah. Remember, we do have a half hour for each segment. You got about 10 more minutes.
I know. 9 months before Rosa Parks refused to relinquish her seat on the public bus, 15-year-old Claudette Colvin was riding home on a city bus after a long day at school. A white passenger boarded, and the bus driver ordered Claudette to give up her seat. Claudette refused.
Wow. 15 years old.
15 years old. She was arrested for civil disobedience and briefly put in jail. The NAACP and other civil rights groups considered rallying around Colvin's case in their campaign against Alabama's segregationist laws before focusing on efforts on Rosa Parks' protest 9 months later. Nevertheless, Colvin was one of the four plaintiffs in the landmark Browder versus Gale case in 1956, which ruled that segregation laws of Montgomery and Alabama state were unconstitutional. Anne Murray was the first African-American woman to be ordained an Episcopal priest in the 1960s. Murray died of cancer in 1985, but he was an Episcopal priest, yeah. And Madam C.J. Walker was an African-American entrepreneur who became America's first female self-made millionaire. She was born in 1867 to former slaves on a Louisiana cotton plantation. She rose to power to become America's first female self-made millionaire. She created the Madam C.J. Walker Company, headquartered in Indianapolis, Indiana. Her company was a cosmetic manufacturer that specialized in beauty and haircut products for African-American women. She helped establish the YMCA in the black community in Indianapolis and contributed funds to the Tuskegee Institute. Upon moving to New York, she joined the NAACP, donated generously to their anti-lynching fund, and commissioned the first black architect in New York City to build Via Luardo Waro, her home on the Hudson, where great minds such as W.E.B. Du Bois and Booker T. Washington gathered to discuss social matters important to African-American communities.
Wow.
At the time of her death in 1919, she was known not only as a remarkable, successful African-American business owner, but one of America's most successful entrepreneurs of all time.
See, you don't hear stuff like this ever. Sad.
Yeah.
So cool.
Benjamin Banneker taught himself astronomy and math to become America's first known African-American man of science. In 1773, where he was born, he lived in Maryland with his mother, a free African-American woman, and his father, a former slave. While researchers believe young Benjamin spent time attending a Quaker school, he had little opportunity for formal education, so he became self-taught. His ability to calculate the positions of celestial objects at regular intervals, he began publishing almanacs in 1792 through 1797. Each issue included Banneker's astronomical calculations, weather predictions, and tables, as well as poetry and writing on literature, medicine, and politics. Banneker's scholarly pursuits led him to correspondence with Thomas Jefferson. In a letter from 1791, Banneker successfully challenged the then Secretary of State's view on slavery and intellectual capacity of black people. Jefferson responded, and Banneker later published their correspondence. In 1791, he also joined the survey team tasked with establishing the boundaries of the national capital. There you go.
Wow. So many awesome people that I had no idea about. Some I did, but not all that. There's been a few that's been mentioned in high school history.
Yeah.
You know. Which that's another thing. I believe, too, that there should be a lot more black history in history class.
Agreed.
You know?
The 6,888th Battalion was an all-black, all-female unit of the military that delivered mail to World War II troops across England.
Wow. Yeah. That's insane.
Let's see. Langston Hughes' great-uncle, John Mercer Langston, was the first black man admitted to the Ohio bar. He was born free in 1829 and worked to become a lawyer. Even though he was denied law school admission, he began studying at our local abolitionist lawyers in the 1850s. In 1854, a district court committee admitted him to the bar, calling him condescendingly nearer white than black as they did so. John Langston went on to become the first black man elected to the U.S. House of Representatives in Virginia. The Harlem Hellfighters were a regiment of all black soldiers during World War I. They were sent to active duty in December of 1917, deeded over to the French army. There, the Hellfighters found themselves welcome and integrated into the troops, a very different experience from their U.S. Army time. Over 170 men from the 369th were awarded the Cross of Valor during the war. It was not until 2019 the men were awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor, Congressional Gold Medal, by the U.S. in recognition of the risks they took and the rewards they secured. So nearly 100 years after their service.
Wow.
And a lot of people don't know Betty Boop, the famous cartoon character, came directly from Helen Kane, a popular flapper and film star. And her own persona was direct rendition of Baby Esther, stage name for Esther Jones. So Betty Boop was actually designed off of an African American woman.
Yeah. Really?
And Ralph Bunche was the first person of color and the first African American to receive the Nobel Peace Prize. And that happened in, it doesn't give me a date, but he worked with the United Nations as early as 1944. He, along with Eleanor Roosevelt, was responsible for creating the 1948 Universal Declaration of Human Rights. His Nobel Prize was given in recognition of his work amongst the Arab-Israeli conflict in the late 1940s. And he was the UN's chief mediator for conflict and negotiated the 1949 Armistice Agreement. In 1950, he was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. And Harriet Tubman, who we all talk about and hear from time to time, was the first woman to lead a U.S. military operation. In 1863, Tubman led a regiment in the raid on Combahee Ferry. Tubman planned and carried out the attack, which freed some 750 enslaved people and laid waste to the Confederates' encampment. A few weeks later, the 54th Massachusetts Regiment, an all-black volunteer regiment, executed a similar raid up the river in Darien, Georgia. And Ida B. Wells' anti-lynching pamphlet helped usher in a new era of journalism, in which she detailed, in 1892, she detailed lynching accounts throughout the U.S. and how lynchings were enacted to punish black people who threatened white power structures. Her investigative journalism gave rise to a whole new methodology. And that's just a scratch of the surface of information on African Americans that have provided a tremendous contribution to our society. So next time you hear some white supremacists tell you that if it weren't for white people, we wouldn't have society as we have it, laugh at them because they are ignorant.
Yeah. With that being said, I would like to everybody have a moment of silence for all the slaves, all the innocent black men that have lost their lives, and thank you, everybody. Alrighty, so while that was our little segment of Black History, Bishop did a phenomenal job with that. He is the history guru, so I figured this would be his good segment. With that being said, we're kind of going to take a 360-degree turn here and talk about some politics a little bit. There is multiple things going on in politics right now, stimulus checks, GOP friction, all kinds of stuff. What we're going to talk about now is stimulus checks. I know I've been looking pretty much all day on what's going on here, and I have no idea. I haven't seen anything. Have you?
There's not a lot of word out of the Capitol today about what's going on as far as the stimulus progress.
Is it a possibility that this may not go through?
No, the procedural hurdles have been overcome, so it'll go through. Reconciliation sometimes takes a bit to reconcile the numbers in a way that you don't have to go back for another vote on the entire bill, because they can't change the structure of the bill. They can only change numbers. And so reconciliation sometimes takes a bit. I had hoped we would see some progress today. It may be Monday before we do, unless they plan on pulling an all-nighter tonight.
They may. Been doing it recently. Them poor guys, I feel so bad. They must be so tired. And these aren't spring chickens either.
So the goal is, and this is what Biden has said all along, sadly some people misunderstood him, and that is that he would see that everyone got $2,000. Well, that included the $600 we got before.
Yeah.
And so they're working on getting the $1,400 to make it up to the $2,000 that everybody should have gotten originally. And never fear, there are other bills in the pipeline to bring more stimulus money to Americans who are in desperate need of help during COVID. It's not just this one bill. But this is the major bill because it stops foreclosures. It puts some debt collection actions on hold, and it gives stimulus money. It also provides more money for PPEs, personal protective equipment for people in the medical field. It provides more money for vaccinations, production, COVID testing and supplies. I mean, it even has money in it for education to help schools safely return by providing them the essential supplies that they need to, you know, make sure kids remain healthy in school.
Yeah. And speaking of vaccine, I do have an update to give. My grandfather actually got the vaccine, and all he said was that his arm hurt. And he was a little tired. He took a second nap. But other than that, he was fine. So that then made me feel stronger of wanting it. So, you know, when it comes here, because Biden's talking about having it in pharmacies. So, and that would be great, you know, because then everybody can get this crap and when we can go back to normal. You know, I want to go back to normal. Now, I'm scared of the side effects of it, but I think the worst I'll have is my anxiety. So, you know, if I can get it, I'm going to get it because I don't want to go through this. I haven't got COVID, thank God, knock on wood, but nor do I want to have it. So,
well, I would caution too. I don't think that we will ever go back to normal.
No.
You know, we have to accept the fact that this has changed our way of life. And it needs to, you know,
of course.
We have played fast and loose for far too long with other people's health, and I keep pointing it out and a lot of people ignore it, but we have 80,000 Americans die every single year to the flu. If we really want to make sure that we lower deaths from communicable diseases, then things like a mask need to be just standard procedure. I mean, look at Asian countries. You know, they wear a mask almost all the time, every single day.
Yeah.
If anyone there starts feeling any the least bit sick, they wear a mask. They wear gloves. You know, they protect themselves and others. It's less about protecting themselves and more about protecting others. We don't do that here. Our philosophy is, I'm sick, I'm going to share it with everybody. Because if I have to be, everybody has to be miserable with me. And so, you know, we have one of the highest rates in the world of deaths from something as simple as the flu. You know, and so if people were to continue wearing masks, continue to sanitize their hands as they should, continue to distance from people the way they should, then we wouldn't have these kind of communicable diseases killing people. Now, I'm not saying, you know, forever abandon human contact, but use your brain. If somebody looks sick, if they are complaining they're sick, don't go run up and give them a hug.
Yeah.
You know, keep your distance. But I think that we really have to do better long term, so that this is going to end up being a new norm, I think, that we have to just get used to. And I've purchased a slew of masks for myself so that I can continue wearing masks even after COVID is over, because I intend to make that part of my regular attire, just because I'm not going to risk being caught again in another pandemic or contributing to someone else's death.
Do you think Biden's the one to stop this pandemic?
He certainly can't do worse than Trump, who is doing absolutely nothing. I think we have a greater fighting chance of surviving this pandemic with Biden than we did with anyone else. That said, I don't think anybody is the savior when it comes to COVID. But I do think that we have a better chance of getting out of it without... I mean, if by comparison, if Trump was still in charge with absolutely no plan for vaccines, no plan for stopping and containing this, we could see a million and a half people dead before it was all said and done.
Yep.
I mean, people are throwing a fit because Biden says we might see another 200,000 people die. Well, you weren't throwing a fit when, you know, 400,000 people died on the former president's watch. And,
it's all just back and forth crap. You know how it is. I mean, the Trump supporters and Republicans are all pissed off. And, you know, I talked to a guy who's really not neither. He's independent. And he's 75. So he has seen a lot. And I said, through all the Democratic presidents that you have been through, you know, has there always been that gun scare? Because that's one of the main things that, for me, that was the main thing that I was worried about. I really didn't care anything about really much. And he says, you know, it's just been a scare that people have brought up towards the Democrats for a long time. And they use it to turn against them. And it's, I don't think it's right. And I know I won't worry about it ever again because it's a scare tactic. It's a scare tactic for Republicans to get votes. And that's all it is. And Trump got a vote of me because of that. So I fell for it, you know, but never again. And you certainly have given me a lot of insight and something that nobody has done in forever. My own mother couldn't do was turn me over to the other side. Which you have. So, you know, yeah.
Well, I tell you, this has always been a scare tactic by the Republicans. Gun control has. The other thing they use is abortion. You know, the Democrats are going to come and eat your babies, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Insane. And then Of course, now we have to worry about members of the QAnon party, the QO, who are out there trying to scare people with Jewish lasers from space. You know, it's insane.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, we'll see what all happens. But one thing that I am very happy of is that they do have control right now of the Senate and the White House, because, you know, they're more out for the American people. And I understand better now what my son's godfather told me about him switching from Republican to Democrat. He was Republican for 20 yeah. years. And what happened was is that, you know, he really saw that the Democratic people are out for the American people. And I mean that in a good way, and that they want to help us out. And the number one thing that has helped me is that during this pandemic, they could give two shits less. I mean, they weren't even thinking about a stimulus check. Then they thought of $600, you know, so it was like pulling teeth. So thank God this has a more productive type angle on it, because last time, 6 months through this crap, I don't want to go through that again. So I'm happy as hell that things are speeding up good.
Well, hopefully we're going to see some real positive changes. The number of new cases is beginning to slow down. The number of deaths are continuing to be steady for a little while. Sadly, because it takes usually 2 to 3 weeks from the time that they begin experiencing symptoms until they die, if they're going to die. And so, and usually all of that time they're in the ICU. Okay. So nobody fear that you're just going to drop dead tomorrow. But, the thing is that with the death numbers, they're going to be steady for probably 2 or 3 more weeks, and then you'll start to see them begin to go down, hopefully. But for the first time ever since the vaccines were released back in November, we have actually, thanks to the work Biden has done, we are now vaccinating at a rate that is 10 times higher than the number of new cases. So, that's a great thing, because that means that we can get ahead of it instead of staying behind. That's a plan that the Trump administration didn't have. It didn't have a plan ahead of it.
No.
And so, by authorizing a whole new set of people who are allowed to give the vaccines, you know, authorizing military field medics and EMTs and everyone else who typically they are allowed to do those types of things in limited settings to now do them much more broadly. We have a whole new core of people who can actually administer the vaccine now, and this will ramp up vaccinations across the nation.
Yeah. Which that's good, because you know what, that'll help us get it going.
I do want to say, because this has become kind of a battle cry for me, and I know that a lot of people can get angry saying this, but you know, the new variant that's out there that is much more contagious, and I know you've heard of it. It's been in the news. It's been everywhere that one of the new variants is very contagious.
Yeah.
One of the early recommendations by a doctor that I respect, immunologist that I respect, to deal in this field all of their life, is the double mask thing. And I know a lot of people say, well, you know, double masking is no good. It's not. Listen, folks, if one mask is great and works great, two masks just guarantees you're that much safer. And when you've got something that's more contagious than the original strand, you got to do what you got to do to protect yourself. I double mask every single time I leave the house. because I honestly don't want to catch it. I have too many risk factors for dying from COVID. So it does not affect your breathing any more than, I mean, I've worn it double mask for 14 to 18 hours at the hospital. And my O2 sats when I'm finished are 99. You're not going to die. It's not going to cause you carbon dioxide poisoning. You're going to be fine. So please, for the love of God, wear a mask. And if all possible, double mask. Because the new variant is nothing to joke with. It's very contagious. And it's very difficult. Very easy to catch and very difficult to fight. So please, double mask.
Absolutely. Well, I'll tell you what, I feel awful. Some of my coworkers have got it. And gosh, one guy right next to me got it. And another guy across from me got it. And I feel bad. They haven't been the same since.
And the new variant tends to attack children more than it does adults. So, I mean, it still attacks adults, but a lot of children are getting it now, the new variant. Seems to really for kids. Especially if you have kids or going to be around kids, double mask. Be safe.
Yeah. Oh, and that's one of the things too as well, is people don't want a mask at home.
Yeah.
So they think, oh, it's my family. I'm with them every single day. You know, so, it's up to them. I know what I
would
do,
be very careful around your family, especially if you're exposed. I don't wear a mask at home.
But, that's what I'm saying.
You know, if I'm exposed, I stay away from everybody. I quarantine.
Oh, of course.
Which I just had to go through recently because, you know, I had a scare.
A scare.
What, 2 weeks ago when Luna and Lilith thought they.
Oh, yeah, that's
And I
right.
had been
yeah,
around
yeah.
them during the incubation period, so I had to, you know, be very careful. I was tested, thankfully came back negative, but I stayed away from everybody, quarantined myself in the home so that, you know, hopefully we wouldn't spread it to anybody. Of course, it's a little bit better now. Father Matt and my wife are both have now had their second vaccine shot, and they're 2 weeks out from it, so they're now at 95% protected. So that makes it a little bit easier. So, I'm the only one in the house susceptible to it.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you'll get it soon. But yeah, I'll tell you what. I mean, it's it's scary. It's really scary. I told you before, I don't like uncertainty, you know. Yeah. So it scares me. But yeah, you know, I'll tell you what. What do you have to say with this stimulus check? I mean, the things that they're adding in. You know, do you agree with it?
So far, everything that I've read that's in the bill, I agree with. You know, there's always going to be a little bit of pork around the edges. That's just Congress. But the greatest bulk of the bill goes towards stimulus checks for Americans. And goes towards education, supplies for education to help them handle the pandemic. PPEs, vaccine. Distribution and production, PPE production and distribution, COVID testing supplies and distribution. So there's a lot of good stuff built into this bill. Every single bit of it's necessary. So I think that it's important that it passes and passes quickly because what's going to help us overcome it.
Yep, I agree. I'll tell you what, we have a better chance now, like you said earlier. Yep. We do. One thing that I really like about this administration is that they're very, very professional. But not only that, Joe has been really, compromising. He's been compromising with Republicans, inviting them to the White House, you know, not wanting them not to be involved. But like you said, you know, I will put the American people first, and then that second. So that's one thing that I really love about him, is that he's been showing such leadership. And we haven't had that professionalism and leadership in a long time. So it's nice to see that.
Yes, indeed. And, you know, this is the thing. You know, the Republicans have made it clear that they don't want to play ball. They just want to win at all costs. And
of course.
So I think it's wholly appropriate, just like, and I'll point this out, in 2017, you know, the Republicans passed their tax cut bill, which benefited, of course, the top 1%, with zero Democrat input, zero Democrat support, didn't even let them come to the table and talk about it. And so I think it's wholly appropriate for Democrats who are trying to pass this bill to help Americans get through a pandemic to move forward if the Republicans don't want to.
Yep, I agree. And it's only right, because you know what? They did it. They did it to Democrats. So, you know, can't be pissed off too much. They controlled for 4 years. And during the 4 years, a lot of bullshit has been gone through. And one of it was the Democrats not really going to the White House. Nancy Pelosi had said, this is refreshing. This is nice. When they went to the White House the other day. And, you know, that actually made me really happy, because, you know, not only was a Republican, and I'm still on the fence about a few things, but we're working on that. Not only did I care about that, but I mostly cared about us getting along. That was the one major thing that I wanted. You know, and I think Joe will do an amazing job doing that.
I think so.
So, with the friction going on in the GOP, I mean, how is this? I mean, what is this spelling disaster in the GOP? I mean, what is your take on it?
Well, that's a good question. I honestly think that we're witnessing the death of the GOP. I've started calling them the QOP, since they seem to support QAnon so well.
Yeah.
You know, I'm reminded of people with spines who used to be GOP members. You know, Barry Goldwater was one of them. He was a horrible racist, by the way. I don't support that. But when the writing was on the wall for Richard Nixon, Barry Goldwater and two other leaders of Congress for the Republicans went to Nixon, who was a Republican, and said, "You either resign tomorrow or we impeach and convict you." You know, because it's going to happen. And the very next day, Richard Nixon resigned the office of president. You know, we don't have that kind of leadership today in the Republican Party. If someone like Marjorie Taylor Greene had become part of the House of Representatives in Barry Goldwater's day, they would have laughed her out of the House of Representatives chamber within the first 5 minutes of her spiels. Instead, she's given free rein, was put on committees. It required a vote of the entire House to get rid of her off of an education committee. Here's a woman who says she believes 9/11 never happened. She believed Jews built solar lasers to attack people from space. She believes that AOC and Rashid, and the other one, the three members they call the squad, should be taken out and shot for treason just because they're women of color.
Oh, Ilhan Omar.
Ilhan Omar, because they, you know, swore an oath on the oath of office on the Quran instead of the Bible. And, I mean, I could just go on and on the things that she's done. And yet, the leadership of the House of Representatives, Kevin McCarthy and others, gave her a standing ovation, support her 100%. This is not leadership, and this is going to cause the downfall of the Republican Party. Because most moderate Republicans can't even stand to hold their nose and call themselves Republican right now.
And for you guys that don't know who she is, I'm just going to read off of what it says who she is. Marjorie Taylor Greene is an American far-right politician, businesswoman, and conspiracy theorist, serving as the U.S. representative for Georgia's 14th district. And but you know what, for a 46-year-old, you think she'd be a little bit smarter.
Well, I'm not sure how to address that. Keep going.
There's another QAnoner, by the way, that it just surfaced that she got her GED just before she swore into the House of Representatives.
Is that
how are you doing, Father Matt?
Thank you.
That's Bobbert, Brenda Bobbert, who is also the woman who her whole campaign consisted of. I'm going to carry my Glock onto the House floor.
Can't do that.
Oh no, they gave her the District of Columbia this week gave her a concealed carry permit.
Oh my God!
So, never mind.
Anyway, that was her whole campaign. Was I'm going to Washington and I'm going to carry my Glock everywhere with me. Oh, for the love of God! Oh, and she won. She's from Colorado. She won. Yep.
What?
So we have dumbed down politics so much that we now pander to the lowest common denominator. And so racism, bigotry, hatred, division, that's what you're going to get. That's what wins elections right now. And until we change the hearts and minds of everyday Americans, it's not going to get any better. And I think that they should have expelled Marjorie Taylor Greene from the House of Representatives, not from the committees.
I do too.
Anyone who's an anti-Semite, who is a xenophobe, who peddles in conspiracy theories,
history denier,
who's a history denier, a truther, a birther, everything earther, probably believes in a flat earth and the sun revolves around the earth. They need to be removed from leadership. They don't need to be glorified. We're back to that whole statue thing again. You're glorifying ignorance.
Well, I'll tell you what. The biggest test will be whether the GOP has fallen apart with... hold on here, Bishop. Hold on 1 second. Let me get my charger here. The biggest test of the GOP will be Trump's gosh darn, I'm just lost for thought. Impeachment trial. So we'll see exactly who is on.
Well, we're already beginning to see signs of what's going to happen. Liz Cheney tonight was censured by the Republicans in, where is she from, Wyoming. She was censured tonight because she voted to impeach President Trump. So we're already beginning to see hints of what's going to happen. And that is, no amount of evidence is going to sway the hardline Republicans because they're scared of Trump. They're scared of his influence. They're scared of his ability to manipulate the elections against them.
Now, McConnell has done some centrist backpedaling.
And that's only because he's beginning to see that while Trump does have some power still, he doesn't have near as much power as he thinks he has.
Well, I'll tell you what, there's a lot of shit going on, and GOP is really just doing low blows now. 21 hours ago, GOP wanted Pelosi to pay $5,000 for ignoring her own medical detector rules in Capitol. So they're just trying to pick anything and everything right now.
Well, and here's the other thing that this boils down to. And I've said it to you, I've said it to a bunch of people. It's this us versus them mentality continues to exist.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. You know, when... you know, you can't even get 100 people in the Senate to come together and wear masks when all of them are old enough that they have one foot in the grave and another on a banana peel, and you're in the middle of a worldwide pandemic, and you can't even get them to come together and wear masks for each other's protection. You have a serious problem. And what was bad was I was watching, I don't know, it was yesterday, the day before, Rand Paul, doctor, admittedly self-proclaimed Dr. Rand Paul of ophthalmology. Granted degree by certification as an ophthalmologist by his own certifying agency he created and set up, which just boggles my mind. But anyway. So, stands on the floor of the Senate, maskless, talking to people and stuff, and has to get called out by a fellow member for not wearing a mask, a doctor for not wearing a mask. You have a serious problem. You know, it's this us versus them mentality that I don't care about you as long as I'm right.
Yep. I agree. That's what I was saying before.
And good. Rand Paul's had COVID. So he know just how dangerous he is.
Guys on the live, if you got any questions, go ahead and start typing them. We are going to start taking questions from you guys. Father Matt, what do you think about all this stuff? Tell me your input.
Me, personally, I'm trying to find a diplomatic way of phrasing this. Well,
you say whatever you want to say.
That if the telltale sign or telltale sign of the GOP coming together and doing things would be the impeachment trial. Honestly, I don't think they're capable of doing this, and I think that, as Bishop has stated previously, we're going to see the death nails start, or the death tolls of the Republican Party start ringing here any minute. And people that are going to stay in the party are people that are hardliners, and the rest of the moderates, such as yourself, and people like my parents. Other family members are going to finally wake up and smell the roses and defect.
I would hope.
So we're we'll probably within the next 4 years see a split of the GOP and see a new party emerge, like what happened in the 1800s with the Whig Party and the Republican Party. So,
and I think Trump's already starting that, because you know he's decided he's going to form his Patriots Party, which basically is like forming the Dixiecrats all over again. And so it'll be that hub of racism and bigotry and hatred all in one party. And that'll leave most of your moderate Republicans to pick up the pieces of what's left of the party.
And his party is essentially going to be useless if he he can create it. Anybody can create a political party within a state and can run for office with it. But for him to gain any kind of traction, if he wants to run under that party and do what he wants to do, he has to win over 5% of the vote. Just to make it to a political, just to make it to a debate floor. So he's shooting himself in the foot for 2024 if that's what he wants to run for. He has to gain at least 5% of the vote during the 2024 cycle.
And I don't, I also don't think that he's going to be able to run in 2024. I don't think, even if they fail to convict him, I think that they will try to pass the resolution barring him just based on impeachment alone, which is possible for them to do. It's constitutional and legal for them to bar him from running for office. And I think that they'll go ahead and do that. That only requires a simple majority to pass. So they'll have that, and that'll bar him from ever running for federal office ever again. So I don't think that we ever have to worry about that anyway.
Good news, because the man's not even qualified to run for dog catcher.
Let me answer this question real quick before we get far ahead. Fire God, how is he allowed to do all that stuff you said, Bishop? I just talked about. Well, in the United States, anyone can establish a political party. It doesn't require government approval. It doesn't require, you know, all of that stuff. It just, you just basically start a website, you gain some members, set up a structure, make yourself a political party, and then you start trying to get on ballots.
And what it requires is you just register party with the state, with a state secretary of election, and you're done.
Yeah. If he's impeached, he can still run for office. But if they vote to make it where he can't, then he can't. But right now, he can still run for office.
Do you think he has a fair shot if he were to run again? Because let me ask you this: Biden is probably not going to run again. Okay, so Harris will run, but who do you think would be an up-and-comer as another Democrat and also as a Republican? Who do you think we're going to see up on that stage again? That's the second part of my question.
I think it's too early to really begin that speculation. I do say that I think it'll be a Trump. It won't be a Donald Trump, but I think it'll be a Trump. One of his children.
I think trying to establish that for herself. But
now, I'll be honest with you, I don't see them. I think the Trump name will be so damaged by the end of all of this that I don't see that as actually being a possibility. As far as up-and-coming Republicans who might run for president, I can't think of anybody. You're going to have
Ted Cruz?
Ted Cruz is damaged goods. After all of his the insurrection, him and Marco Rubio, they're shot.
I would hope it would be somebody who's more moderate, like Susan Collins.
Collins too old.
I thought she was only
in Murkowski. Collins is in her 70s. As far as for the Democrats, there's a lot of people in that field. Adam Schiff is still young enough. Pete Buttigieg. Kamala Harris. Beto O'Rourke. I mean, there's a you name. There's a ton of them. Stacey Abrams, even.
Fire said Michelle.
Well,
Obama.
Even Michelle's still young enough. I mean, you know, there are a lot of possibilities. I think some of the names that you've heard before, Hillary Clinton, Biden, they're just going to be too old. They're not going to do it. It's just too much. Yep. I don't even think Bernie has it in him for another run.
Which sucks because
Bernie's
he should
got
have been.
Good ideas. I fear Bernie would have ended up being our version of Trump in the end.
He would have been divisive.
Out there on the front lawn of the White House going, "Get off my lawn!"
Yeah, which he gained a lot of momentum with younger people. I know he sure did with me.
I'll be honest with you, if he mellows just a smidge. Somebody I hope to see on the presidential ballot someday is somebody that follows in his footsteps, and y'all are going to flip your nut for this, but AOC. I think AOC would make a great president. She follows in the footsteps of Bernie Sanders. Very much a Bernie student. If she mellows just a bit over the next 4 years, I think she has a really big shot at running for president.
There's a bigger office than she has.
Yeah.
I would love to see her run for Senate as well. Because her voice is much needed in the Senate.
All right.
No, don't vote for me. I can't run for office.
I'm a waste. I'm a waste.
Vote Greer 2024.
I'm holding office. Our canon laws won't allow me. So, yeah. Our clergy cannot run for office.
Same thing with Catholic clergy.
Although they break that a lot. There have been a lot of Catholic clergy who've broken that over the years, but they're not supposed to run for office, but our clergy are precluded from running for office. Yeah. So.
Well, I'll tell you what. You guys got any questions on the live? Put them on the live, guys. We'll go ahead and answer them. I just looked up as well about the stimulus checks. I couldn't find anything, but I did find tensions between Trump and GOP lawmakers increase amid attempt to overturn election COVID. This is December 2024. Hold on 1 second here. Oh, here we go. Friction grows between Trump and impeachment trial with GOP. It's there.
Mark and not holding it, starting the trial the day after the inauguration.
Yeah. So, let me tell you this. I mean, what is the agenda here? I mean, is it to get COVID relief and then do this impeachment trial? I mean, are they going to do it at the same time? I mean, what's going on?
Well, right at the moment, they're doing both. They're doing both. The impeachment trial will start, I believe, this next week in the Senate. Trump was given an opportunity to testify. He declined. Which basically shoots their defense in the foot. And then
Giuliani's getting disbarred, so that precludes
and
sued.
Yeah,
what?
There are several several agencies working to disbar Giuliani. He's being sued by several voting machine companies.
By the way, it only takes two attorneys in the state that somebody holds their private license in to bring forth a legal charge of for disbarment.
Yeah.
So.
And then.
So anybody can.
No,
do that.
Not for disbarment. They can make a complaint, but it takes two attorneys.
It takes two attorneys to sign, certify it.
Yeah. And then. All of Trump's defense team quit last week. So he doesn't have much of a defense. He wanted the defense to basically be, I lost the election, so I'm allowed to do whatever I want to. Everything I did is covered under the First Amendment. Well, the problem with that is that you have the right to say those things, which he did. But you're not free from the consequences of your actions, you know. And so, if you incite a riot and people die, you're on the hook for murder. But again, I don't think that they'll end up convicting him. I don't think enough Republicans have the fortitude to. Stand their ground and be moral. They could surprise me.
Well, we'll see. I really don't know how this is going to turn out. I personally think, this is my opinion, I think he's going to be let go free.
I think so. I think that he'll be exonerated by the Senate. The fact that there's mountains of evidence that he's a criminal. Got a police officer killed. And you know, the GOP clapped about it, enjoyed it. So there you have it.
I hope everything works out. I really do, because you know, no matter what side you're on, you know, people need to be held accountable for their actions and what they have done. It's not you know, free for all. And I know he said in one comment, "Well, I told him to go all home." Well, yeah, you told him to go all home after everything happened. You didn't stop it right then and there after they stormed it. The first damn thing you should have done was from your bunker, wherever the hell he was covered, because obviously he was good. He didn't give a shit. He should have, you know, said, hey, do not go in there. This is not how Americans act. You know, we are not going to go against other Americans, this, that, and third. But, you know, from the get-go,
Mike,
he's been
Mike, let's back
shitty.
It up just a tad. He met where they were at, on a tent, on a stage, and
there was a rally.
What the heck
store.
He said, because a damn reporter wasn't there to catch it.
There are videos,
but he needs to be held accountable for that, for not seeing the open guns being carried, for not seeing signs, for not seeing everything.
I think
you're telling him to go home on the stage from the stage.
You're oversimplifying, because there's video from reporters that show him standing on that stage telling them, I'm going to march with you to the Capitol. Let's go to the Capitol. Let's demand they do things right. He saw the guns. They were going to be there with guns. Marjorie Taylor Greene. There were videos of her the day before saying that she had talked with the president about what was going to happen the next day, and everything. So he knew there was going to be violence that day. He knew it. He chose to incite violence. He chose to incite violence, and a police officer ended up dead. And his first video... He came out and basically told them, that he thought they were doing a great job. It wasn't until much later in the day that he came out and said, "I deplore the violence." Well, it was already over by then. You know, yeah. Let's not mince words. He wound them up and pointed them in the right direction. And he knew what would happen. He had been predicting it for weeks, that there would be violent uprisings in the Capitol. He had said it in rallies. He had said it in fundraising emails. He had said it in speeches. "I'm not participating in whataboutism because you're an idiot. And because the BLM violence was perpetrated by white supremacists trying to attack the BLM movement and discredit them." I unmuted him for a reason. I want people to see how these people are so idiotic and stupid.
What did you do? One of
Trump supporters in my live right now, one of the insurrectionists who's here to make the world aware that he's an insurrectionist.
Well, he said, and I mean, I want to put this on my podcast where we're going to call him out. Why did it take Biden 8 months to denounce Black Lives Matter?
Because there wasn't Black Lives Matter violence. It's been proven time and again that white supremacists showed up at the BLM protests. In fact, in one of them in Wisconsin, a police officer dressed as a BLM supporter was throwing things through an auto zone or advanced auto, I don't remember which one, window and stealing stuff. And they actually captured his image and linked him as being a police officer, a white police officer, who supported white supremacy. Yeah. And yet, all he can do is laugh out loud because he's an idiot. So the thing is that these are the people are the ones who have selective outrage about the fact that white people get hurt in the street. But when black people do it, they say, "Oh, we're just cleaning up the mess." Because they support lynchings. They support black people being dead because they're racist and bigots.
Yep. Well, I'll tell you what, it's one of those blinding people. I'll tell you what, you know, I can't talk. I was like that, but you know, you have stated a lot of facts, and I have fact checked what you've told me before, and it's coming out clean.
Yeah. See, when you start looking at facts instead of just believing every word that comes out of your God Trump's mouth, not yours, Mike, but these people's God Trump's mouth, you begin to realize, oh, look, Trump's a liar and a fraud. And this is what you end up with is the reality that, you know, the world isn't what you think it is. You know, the selective outrage here is that these people would be more outraged if it were a black officer shooting a white guy unarmed in the street. Than a white officer shooting a black person unarmed in the street. Because when it's a black person, they go, "Well, he must have been a thug." Well, oh, yeah. I've met many a white person who's a meth addict that the police officers dance around while he tries to kill them, and they manage to apprehend them peacefully. A black guy standing there with his hands up, not doing anything, they have to shoot and kill him. Where's the outrage then?
No. They're not ready for that yet. they don't know about that.
And truth they'll never know it because they are more concerned with maintaining their white privilege, white status.
Oh.
And continuing to perpetuate racism.
Yeah, well, Raging Peasant, I think another one. What was the last protest for a black officer shooting a white
guy? I don't
guy?
Remember any because it happens so rarely. It happens so rarely.
I'm sure the protests involved the white.
In fact, if you go to my videos here, you'll see a black officer being harassed by a white guy calling him every name in the book, despite him trying to uphold the store's right to eject him for being rowdy and abusing customers. And guess what? He never once draws his gun, never once does anything to the white guy. But if it had been a black guy, then he would have been shot and killed right then and there, and it wouldn't have been a single thought about it.
And now, because you can't get us on facts, you're getting us on ad hominems. Great job.
Father Matt, seems like you got a lot on your mind with this. Tell us. We got time.
I just think it's deplorable that people can't unite and say that and say what this country has experienced the last 4 years, which is a decay in our moral fabric, an uprising in racist ideology that has been dormant, is now here and awoken again, and something can be done about it, but people are missing the mark and the opportunity to stand up, rise up, and do something because they're too busy political rhetoric on both sides. The time's now, folks.
Yep. Well, I'll tell you what, it certainly is.
Yep.
So, but I'll tell you what, I want change. Everybody wants change, but some people don't want change. They want to do one thing and that's it.
Absolutely right.
So, well, you got anything
I
more
don't.
To say?
And I think that we've reached just about our time here, Mike.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. So I just want to make sure you guys didn't have nothing else to talk about. I got my end talked about. And, guys, I want to put on an announcement out there for Season 3 of Total Opposites Podcasting. Really, Season 2 of Total Opposites, Mike's podcasting for Season 1. But I want to put out here and for everybody on the live, what we want to start doing is call-ins. What I would like to do is
go ahead.
Okay. What I would like to do is set up two people for every weekend. I want you guys to message me or Bishop and say, hey, I'd like to be on the podcast for 10 or 15 minutes and give us your input or whatever time. It doesn't even have to be that. But I would like to hear your guys' input as well. You guys make our podcast. And we're forever grateful for that. So if you want to be on a podcast, if you want to give your input about the topics, message me. And I'll have different dates set up for you guys. And I'll let you know the topic so you can think about, the topic you're going to be on. And so you can think about your answer. I'm very excited about this. I want to talk to you guys. I'm excited about the Zoom call even tomorrow night, because I want to see people's faces. So I'd like to hear your voice as well. So
to caveat we're not going to take in trolls. And
no, of course.
If you have proven yourself to be a racist and a bigot, you're not getting on the podcast either, because we're not going to give you a free platform to spread racism and bigotry. You want to do that, go start your own podcast and spread your own hatred and bigotry somewhere else.
Yep. So, all right. Well, I appreciate you guys as always. And I'll see you.